Welcome to the Wale and Yemi Football Pod.
Let us begin what we have come here to do. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's another episode of the Wale and Yemi Football Pod. As usual, coming to you a tad late. I think a week late as well. Did we record last week?
We did not record last week.
Last week was a blur, man. Last week was busy. Like, from Monday to Friday, I was very busy. So we apologize for that. And also, I think we should apologize for the quality of...
Yes, the last
week. Yeah, but we're recording with a different device now, and I'm hoping that the quality at post-production and when you're listening should be 100%. All right, you know the drill. My name is Olawale Adigun, and...
Oh, Yemi Adesanya.
Yeah, and this and this is the Wale and Yemi.
Is it not funny how you want them to call you Olawale Adigun?
But you just want Yemi, right?
Yeah. But somehow, they removed the Ola and the...
The Wale thing just... Yeah, but I mean... But it goes well with the podcast, the Wale and Yemi before. Oh, yeah, it's all good. All right, hope you guys have been chilling. Hope you guys have been enjoying the AFCON. And all of the gifts that it keeps on giving.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It keeps on giving and giving and giving. And we are in the last eight right now. And we will guide you through the last eight on today's episode. Of the pod. In the last 1 week, what have we been up to? What have you been up to, Yemi?
It's been a lot.
You've been on television these days, man.
You go.
Nah. I know, my appearance on TV is the numbers are small compared to yours now. You average like one appearance every 3 days.
Why are you not standing?
Yeah, yeah, like big February? Fish. You're an Afro Sport. Big shout out to Afro Sport, by the way. I didn't know that. You could actually stream AfroSport.
Oh, yeah, you can.
And the streaming is very easy.
Yeah.
Although, I realized I couldn't do it on my television.
No.
Yeah. So, I think it's not compatible with...
No, it's not.
...with your smart TV. But on the phone, it's very seamless.
It's fantastic.
Lovely. I followed the South Africa-Morocco game
on
there. The Cote d'Ivoire-Senegal game, I also watched it on AfroSport. It was lovely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very lovely. But I'm sure they've only extended to the AFCON, not Premier League, right?
So, no.
All right, so big shout out to AfroSport. Whose coverage of the AFCON has been stellar?
Yeah, it's been good. A lot of interesting people.
Yeah.
I've been on the broadcast. It's also been a great opportunity to also reunite with some old colleagues. Interestingly, I was on a panel that had two Adesanyas.
Oh.
Myself and Niro Adesanya.
Oh, man. Niro OG. OG
yeah,
Adesanya, man.
Niro Adesanya was on the same panel with another OG, Oga Abdurrahman.
Yeah, he been. Well, I understand he's like a consultant for the NTA.
Hey!
Yeah. Oh, man. That man has...
He's paid his dues.
He's paid his dues. Yeah. He's paid his dues.
So it's been a great time. It's a great time.
I was on set with him for the Angola-Algeria game on AfroSport as well, and it took us back, you know, off.
No, he has some interesting stories.
Ibn has gone to almost every Nations Cup since 1980, yeah, when we hosted. Yeah. Yeah. It's been to almost every Nations Cup.
He's got some interesting...
Yeah.
Some interesting stories.
Told me about Algiers 90, how if he thought it was very important that Algeria won the final against Nigeria. Because if we had won, he's not sure any Nigerian would have left that stadium alive.
Yeah.
That was how old style, you know, all just 90 final was. So he's got stories for days.
Oh, yeah.
Massive experience as a broadcaster. I remember back then, NTA Sports World. And you see him alongside Akilo Ibanji, this woman.
Craig.
No, not Yinka Craig. This woman.
Modele
Sharafat Yusuf and the rest. So, I mean, it was good. And, you know, the Afro Sport thing is also...
Yeah,
in collaboration with the NTA. So, you're going to see some NTA heads in the mix. All right, last week also, what else? Okay, I celebrated my son's 5th year birthday that I didn't invite Yemi Adesanya to.
Yes, he did invite me.
If I invited him, he wouldn't have come. Of course, I'm sure.
Make the invitation first.
Of course, I'm sure. Big shout out to everyone who came. I mean, everybody came from a distance.
But you didn't invite
me. Everybody came from a distance, but... It was a hell of an event to organize.
It's not easy to put together a party.
It is not easy.
No way.
Man, the Monday after Because I had to go to church on Sunday. It was like Thanksgiving Sunday at church. But the Monday after, I shut down. In fact, I only managed to go to work in the evening for my evening sports show at Mainland FM. But it's all good. Big belly shout out to him, Bolu Ati Fiadigun. Wish him the very best.
My son's birthday on Monday too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was on Monday, right? Yeah, big shout out to him as well. Shout out to him. Yeah. All right, where do we start from? Okay, let's just give a rundown of what we're going to do between now and the next 1 hour, because Yemi is busy once again today. We're just going to, you know, hush up maybe an hour, 30 minutes for you guys. Well, I'm sure from next week, I think that regular programming will return. We'll be dropping on Monday. But we'll be talking AFCON, we'll be talking Jurgen Klopp and his impending exit at Liverpool. Xavi called the Barcelona job an unpleasant job and a frustrating job as well. We'll talk about Xavi and, Chelsea-Liverpool tonight.
Yeah.
Arsenal also back in the title conversation as well. And so all this, and hopefully we can choke it up in about 55 minutes on the pod. Let's get cracking. All right, let's start with AFCON. Super Eagles Angola. On Friday, that's the first quarterfinal fixture. Yes. But before we touch on that, how about we just reminisce a bit on the round of 16, your takeaways, starting with the game yesterday, where one of the favorites, the hot favorites, Morocco, were knocked out by the Bafana.
So I'll first of all give a lot of credit to South Africa for how they approached that game. Very solid defensively. But then at the same time, you want to say Morocco can also come out and give the excuse that we're missing some of their, you know, stellar names.
Do you know how many players South Africa are missing?
Hakim Ziyech.
Or basically, South Africa came into that tournament with a strictly home based squad.
Yeah, but that's the direction they desire to go. You know, that's the direction they desire to go. But talking about injuries that happened in tournament, Ziyech, Buffal, that was one. But like I said, credit to South Africa, they approached the game very well, tactically solid, defensively very well disciplined. And I think probably Morocco also probably went into the game a little bit arrogant, expecting that probably they were just going to
roll over South Africa.
And I said, critically, I've also noticed that all the crucial penalties that have been missed at this AFCON are penalties that hit the bar. From Emilio Rousseau to Gabaski to Senegal's penalty miss.
Yeah.
To Hakim Ziyech.
There's been like four misses or five.
And the ball hit the bar.
But why so? I was reading about pens a couple of days ago, and I hope we were going to touch on it, but I'm not sure we're going to do it because of time. And it was about, tactics or things that we used to enjoy in football way back that is not in vogue anymore. And I realized that back then, it was much more difficult to score penalties. Or it was easier to score penalties. It was difficult to score penalties. Why? Because goalkeepers had the liberty
of... could come out.
I was watching the Champions League final of Milan, Juventus or whatever. And Dida was like, or even in his 6 yard, saving penalties.
Yeah, yeah.
But now
you have to stay on the line.
You have to stay on the line. VAR also is checking as well. But in the Premier League this season, the XG for penalties is 0.78. So basically it means that there's a 78% chance of scoring each penalties. And the penalty success rate in the Premier League season has been very high. That explains 0.78. But in the AFCON, it's been a bit difficult. I think Bertrand Traoré has been exceptional, though.
Yes.
Three penalties.
He scored all of his penalties.
Yeah. So maybe there has to be maybe a method to the madness. Or is it because of the high-pressure environment?
Well, the high-pressure environment is one. The nerves is definitely one you have to take into consideration. The event.
Yeah. Look at Hakimi yesterday. Sticks.
But you see, that's the funny thing. This Hakimi thing. So, on my Serie A group yesterday, like Olonade, brings out a quote from Antonio Conte about Hakimi, that he shouldn't be playing penalties.
Why?
That his shooting is very bad in close range. that he can shoot from outside. Mm-hmm. When it comes to penalties, he shouldn't even attempt it. Then I reminded him, I said, well, remember I scored a penalty at the World Cup. It was even a Paneka.
Yeah.
And he said, well, this is what Conte said. I said, well, and the penalty means that the World Cup was even more of a, well, can we say it was more of a pressure penalty because it was the last penalty.
He scored now.
For Morocco.
Against
and he scored.
Spain?
Yeah, I think it was against Spain. And now this one, he goes, maybe aiming for perfection. And then goes and misses.
I think it's a decent penalty. It's not really a bad penalty. But you know what Pele says? A good penalty goes in, a bad penalty doesn't go in. So, fortunate of because that if he had scored, it was a very crucial moment.
It had been 1-1.
1-1, momentum always with them. I thought they played some good stuff.
Yeah.
Credit to Bafana. Bafana, anytime they broke, they caused chaos.
Oh, they caused them problems.
Yeah. The tactics for Hugo Bruce was just soak the pressure and try
and,
to break.
And we also have to have this conversation that, really, going to a tournament, what do teams want? Do you want to go to a tournament, go play sexy football, or go just do the business, get the win, and if it leads you to a trophy, you accept it?
Yeah.
Which is it?
I was having that conversation. I was having that conversation a couple of days on radio, and you also chimed on it. That see, apparently we're going to go through this tournament playing some effective football. We started with 4-3-3, right? And
Jettison
played three at the back, and we've been solid, not spectacular.
Yeah.
We've been more of substance over style.
Yeah, but we're creating chances.
Once this tournament is over, will Nigerians still say, okay, since this style granted us silverware, let's continue with it? Won't you start saying that we have talented players and we should be making more of them from a tactical point of view? I mean, we have to define what you want.
But also, you also have to know that this is probably the longest the coach has had with the team in a stretch.
Yeah, but even in that stretch, they were not playing 3-4-3.
And that's what I'm saying, that in this period, this is the longest he's had to have the players together in a stretch.
Oh, you mean in the tournament?
In the tournament. So, and then he's looked at it that in the context of the tournament, this is what will potentially get us through.
So are you saying that post-tournament, we should start finding ways to play.
We might revert.
No, why should we revert? Because in most of the games I'm also going to play post-tournament are also tournaments or mini tournaments. They qualify as a mini tournament.
Yes, but the pressure, the pressure is not immediate. The pressure is not instant.
Yeah, I mean, the football that we play now, the modern game is a result-oriented game.
Yes.
Do what you can do to be able to achieve what you want to achieve. If this guy was so-called recommended by Jose Mourinho, was Jose Mourinho known for playing exquisite football?
So, everybody that said Jose Mourinho, everybody that said it seems it's Jose Mourinho that's coaching this team.
You know, so I think I like what I'm seeing. It's a side not spectacular. You could see that players like Alex Iwobi are struggling in that register role.
Yes.
Because he's not used to it.
He's not used to it.
You could see that players like even Zaidu Sanusi, although naturally, I don't even think it's a struggle. I don't know what is wrong with Zaidu Sanusi.
Yeah.
He cannot produce moments of quality in game.
He doesn't keep the heights anymore.
Yeah, I've even preferred Calvin Bassey in that position more than Zaidu Sanusi.
It showed indeed.
Now, look at that same system. What's his name? Franco Eka is having fun.
Oh, yes.
He's having fun mopping it up and, hustling and Aaron.
And also being comfortable enough to lead the press.
To lead the press as well. So, a lot of players will be comfortable, some will have to adapt.
Adapt.
But is this what we want post-tournaments? I think we'll get to the bridge we cross.
I think so.
But back to Bafana, they've also gotten to the quarters here. By the way, their coach is the only AFCON winning coach left in the tournament.
Yeah.
He won it with Cameroon in 2017. They've done this with 10 players from Mamelodi Sundowns.
Hmm.
They also have players from Orlando Pirates. In fact, the goal scorer, Magogba, the first goal, plays for Orlando Pirates. Basically, this team is made up of players based in South Africa and, you know, maybe Egypt, Pesitao, case in point, who plays with Al Ahly. They have no foreign-based player in their team. Is that a blueprint we should be looking at?
For us?
Yes.
No, we can't. No. We can't. We can't.
I think we can. You know why?
We can't.
We can if we do what they have. Now, we came into this, I don't know if we had that concern with you. But Samuel Eto'o was talking about South Africa pre-tournament and he was saying that it is a head-scratcher that for the quality the PSL has, South Africa have not been able to make impact internationally. And he made a very good point. The PSL is one of the best leagues in Africa, if not the best. and you expect that it translates a bit to the national team. But maybe that line of thought has ginger South Africa, who are playing some fine stuff. Aside from the first game where they lost to Mali. In fact, I thought the first half against Mali, they played well. They missed the penalty. Yeah. If you remember, hit the post 10 minutes later. Apart from that first game, they've played some decent stuff in this tournament. And they've done it majorly with players.
And they've also been efficient.
And they've done it with players on the home front. So maybe the gains of having players from Sundowns who have played together for a long while is finally, you know, they're enjoying the fruits of all of that.
Yeah.
So maybe if we also put in the work, not a work that we're expecting to see germination in 2 years. We're looking at something in the long run.
That's one.
Yeah. It would be bad if players from Eibar and Rangers or Remo Stars are the mainstay of your team.
So we've been there before. Why do I say we've been there before? I think probably in the late 70s, early 80s, we had Rangers, we had Shooting Stars being the main contributors to the national team. Right? But if we're being sincere, our league and the South African league you mentioned
are miles apart. Yeah. And that's why I said that we cannot achieve it for now.
No, for now we can't. There are a lot of things that have gotten the South African league to where they are today. They're able to attract players from South America, from Oceania, from Asia, and partly some parts of Europe.
Yeah.
But we can't. Whether we like it or not, we cannot. And I don't think we can in the next 5 years. And even the foreign players were able to attract a second, third-rate foreign players from Benin,
from Niger,
Ghana,
Benin Republic,
Cameroon, you know. And for you to get to that point, you
need But over time, even when things were great, were we attracting players?
We attracted decent.
No.
Even by title-winning time.
Benin Republic, the best for Ghana.
Hey, now Benin and Ghana.
Yeah.
So that's what I said.
Edward Ansah, the goalkeeper for Ghana way back, was not playing the
end.
So that's the best we've always done. Yeah. It's as if our league, when even what has its eyes, was attracting players from Venezuela.
Yeah, but because you also realize that the talent pool we have here is far more than whatever South Africa will produce in terms of homegrown talent. That's one. Two, the investment that is required to get to that point, I'm sorry, I don't see where that's going to come out from within the confines of what we have. Why? Because from an infrastructural perspective, we have a huge deficit. We are not funding infrastructure as we should. Look at what Mauritania has done and has gotten them to where they are today. We're not looking at developing the game in a holistic, broader perspective. So maybe in the next 5 years we can't do it, but if we are focused, driven, have some direction, invest all those FIFA goal projects, correctly. But still, you can't take away the fact that Nigerians as a people are usually nomadic in nature.
Yes, I was going there.
Yeah,
we export a lot of players. Even in Africa, I think we're number one.
One Instagram post,
I saw it now.
And it was like,
Nigerians are playing everywhere.
Nigerians are playing everywhere.
Nigerians play in Iraq. Nigerians play in Bhutan. Nigerians play in this guy was playing in Iraq one time now.
And our guy, Abu Aziz, plays in Bangladesh.
This is Nigerian Balotelli.
Yes.
What's his name?
Salami.
Yes.
Bola and Salami.
Bola played in Iraq at a point in time. We have Nigerians playing in Indonesia.
Yeah.
Nigerians playing in Singapore.
I have a friend.
At the point that the top scorer in the Vietnam League or in Cambodia was Nigerian.
Yeah.
So we export a lot of players, so it makes it a bit difficult, you know, to be able to achieve that. But big shout out to South Africa.
Yeah.
I don't know. Next up for them is Cape Verde.
It's a
50-50 game. Very interesting. I think it's going to be end-to-end explosive.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I think that's my game of the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that on Sunday. I think that's Sunday. But let's talk Nigeria, Angola, and Is there an air of overconfidence?
It's typical Nigeria. When we get into our arrogant streak, we are there. And that's why a lot of Africans don't like us. When we get into the zone, we are there. And we're not difficult to... It's not hard for us to get into that zone, into that mix. And that's because the paths that we have taken to get to this point. So you have defeated the host, You have visited the powerhouse in Cameroon, being very efficient, being solid. Especially considering that maybe if you ask 8 out of 10 people going into the AFCON, there was no hope. There wasn't much of expectation for this team. And now you now ask yourself, in the scheme of things, where does Angola rank in the scheme of things, African football? That's keeping aside what they've done at this AFCON. And then if you look at the head-to-head, I think we have a better head-to-head. I think the only blip is when
in
we faced them in 2006.
Yeah.
So there's that air of arrogance. But I'm hoping that the coach, with the goodwill that he has gotten,
a short-term goodwill.
Goodwill.
It's a short-term.
He's able to calm the nerves, calm the expectation within the camp and say, look, guys, the job is not done. It's only going to get harder now.
Is there pressure? Were the top-ranked team left in the tournament?
Yeah, were the top-ranked team left? Were the most successful team left?
Yeah.
That's pressure.
In a tournament that has been... that has not gone according to plan.
Oh, yes.
For the big boys.
According to script.
We are the only big boy left, maybe except for the host.
Yeah.
Who are here because they came through the back door. Their story is a story of from despair to redemption.
Yeah.
You know.
Redemption.
You know, so maybe he also puts a target on our back.
Oh, of course. Of course. And you can already hear the sound bites coming out of Angola. All the big corporations are offering them big money to beat Nigeria.
Now, here's my worry. From a tactical point of view, do we still stick to 3-4-3?
It's not broke, Kali. Don't fix it.
Now, but my problem with that setup is that setup makes you go into a game as an underdog.
It doesn't matter.
I know it doesn't matter. Actually, Angola also play 3-4-3.
Yeah.
But sometimes they play...
They're able to switch it up. Yeah.
I think we're on a game together and they played four at the back. The game previously, they played 3 at the back.
Yeah,
so they can mix and match it. So I don't think that should be a worry.
No.
Now, should this also be a worry, the potential absence of the goalkeeper?
Yes.
I think we're over-dramatizing it.
Yes, Wally, yes.
We're over-dramatizing it.
It's not over-dramatized, Wally.
You know why?
Well, it's not.
Because how does a goalkeeper who has only had 3 caps at this level?
Yeah.
I know he's played for the national team before. A lot of people don't remember that was part of that ill-fated Mexico team.
And you know what? I make it a point to remind everybody now since you told me
that. It was part of that ill-fated Mexico side that beat us, I think, 4-2 or something like that. But how does a guy who has only come to our consciousness after just 4 games become
like the Messiah.
Omniscient of the team that we cannot live, we cannot breathe without Nwabali?
So, Wale, you know when you're in a situation where a situation, when you're in a condition where a situation is shouting, is yearning for something different. Uzoho and Madueke, you can't compare them to Nwabali in charisma, in how he carries himself, in how imposing he is.
What do you want from a goalkeeper? Shot stopping or charisma?
Everything. The goalkeeper has to have the entire
package.
Well,
his basic job, just like we talk about right backs, wing backs, or defenders, is to make saves, right?
Yeah, but you also realize that a goalkeeper, the confidence a goalkeeper gives his defense when that defense is beaten and is able to pull off a great save. The defenders know that, okay, if worse as bad as bad, if they get the better of us, we know there's somebody behind us.
But you know a goalkeeper can be confident and still concede goals.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But at the same time, we're dealing with a goalkeeper who has shown presence, who is backing, who is having conversations with his guy. Which was all, look at the last few games. The friendly against Ivan.
What you guys point
wait
out.
Wait now. No.
The Saudi Arabia game.
No. Let's go back now. Let's come back all through.
Ghana, there were a lot of corporates.
Wait, now.
I can name you 3 corporates from Ghana.
The game against Saudi Arabia. There's an indelible picture.
I know that. But you can't continue to beat Uzoho with the Saudi Arabia stick. You can't continue to beat him with the Ghana stick. You know why? Against Ghana, Calvin Bassey, who we are adulating right now.
Yes.
Had a poor game against Ghana.
Yeah, but
in fact, first 20 minutes of the game, it was done and done. It was taken up at halftime.
But Calvin Bassey was not the person that made the mistake.
Victor Osimhen threw away chances against Ghana. Nobody has, they said he has earned the right to miss those chances, right? But Victor, for Francis Orr, he's always been seen as the poster boy for a non-qualification for that one. It is unfair.
No, it is not unfair.
Now,
Wally.
Check this out.
Yeah.
If Nwabali most likely not going to play the Angola game, what I'm hearing, if that guy plays, that guy's not 100%. I can tell you for sure.
Yeah, true.
So if he's not going to play, Uzo most likely, forget Aleke Ojo.
Now,
the question is, if Uzo is playing that game, in what state of mind do you want that guy to play that game?
He's not going to be at a very good state of mind.
Yeah, because we have put him in that state of mind.
But at the same time, at the back of his mind, he should be telling himself, and that's where a good psychologist is.
So now you guys know the psychologist. After you guys have battered him. You've battered him, but you want the psychologist to attend to him.
You know the amount of people See, Wally, it's an opportunity at redemption for him as well. It's an opportunity to play into the hearts of Nigerians.
That guy
can't
get redemption. Even if he saves 4 penalties in shootouts, and Nwabali is the latest bride in town.
Yeah, but at the same time, they say when the chips are down, they say, come on, there's this problem. Comment the hour, comment the man. Maybe this is his comment the hour, comment the man opportunity.
My fear with Nwabali is he might be rushed into action for Friday. I don't want to be a seer of doom or a prophet of doom, but I hope that anything that happens doesn't come as a result
of that.
Because that honeymoon period will come to an end.
Of course.
There's a honeymoon period that Nwabali is enjoying.
Yeah.
And what I've known in my experience in Nigeria football is that honeymoons always come to an end.
Oh, yes.
It never lasts. So I hope that the medical team that had issues at the beginning of the tournament with Umar Sadiq find their range, sort themselves
and give this guy a real clean bill of health.
Very important. I don't package him and package him. Because, see, I also find amusing that we see our qualifiers to semifinals, we see Nwabali as a prerequisite.
No, I don't think we do. We just feel that having him in goal is a plus.
Yes. But I was talking to a few guys before we came to record, and I told them, you guys are already looking for excuses if Angola should probably beat Nigeria. You say because Nwabali wasn't there. No. You say because Saul wasn't there.
No, but you see...
with or without Nwabali, Nigeria should be beating Angola.
Yes, let's look away from the goalkeeper. With the amount of chances we create, really...
I think we have created most chances in this tournament.
Yes, with the amount of chances we create, really. We shouldn't be having this conversation about goalkeeper or not. Osimhen has missed the most big chances in this competition. He played a beastly performance against Cameroon. Fine. But still, we missed a lot of chances. And at the same time, what that means is that the four players, or whoever it is that is in the position to finish, needs to do better. The two goals we got against Cameroon, like it or not, you can't discount the element of luck on the two goals.
But also, I mean, there was hard work behind it.
Oh, there's hard work. Oh, the pathway to the second goal.
Yeah.
Of course, the first goal was somehow putting pressure on the defender. But I'm talking about the actual finish. Had an element of luck. But hey, you make your luck, you don't buy the ticket, you don't win the lottery. So with the amount of chances we create, we shouldn't be talking about who's in goal. The responsibility is that on the day opportunities come, take them. Let the defense, Calvin Bassey said, goal scoring. My own is not goal scoring. Our own is to defend. Let the midfielders and strikers, let them do the goal scoring. So when the time comes, when the opportunity comes, seize it. Take it.
Speak of seizing opportunities, Onyeka seized this as well.
Absolutely.
Had a monstrous game against Cameroon.
Absolutely.
Will indeed be worried right now?
Will he? It depends on the thing.
That's on turbulent, double entendre there.
Yeah.
Will he?
Will he?
Wilfred, like.
Because it also depends on the mindset of the coach. Right? It also depends on his approach.
I think Onyeka is a much more combative guy than Didi, though.
Yes.
Who is now being cloned to be more of an offensive guy at Leicester with Enzo Maresca.
And also, Nigerians also have to understand certain things, which I had to explain to some guys on Saturday when they were talking about how we progressed the ball from the back and they were trying to blame Onyeka. And I told them, you people need to understand something. Roles are different from position.
Mm-hmm.
The role the player plays on the pitch differentiates from the position he occupies on the pitch.
On the pitch, yeah.
Now, maybe he has improved certain elements of his game, which you have said now that some of it is having more responsibility in the final third. Onyeka's job is to clean up, get possession, hand it over to the next person who will drive play forward. That's his role. And he's done well so far, had a great game against Cameroon. A lot will now depend on what is his psychology, what is the thinking of the coach going forward. When the World Cup qualifiers come, I don't understand, we have a match in March. Actually, another top loss, a match in March. I'm on fire today.
Yeah, on fire. Argentina.
So that would be a first indication.
So that could be a potential clash of the world champions and the African champions.
Exactly.
Yeah. And just put that out there somewhere. Hey. All right, but I'm expecting we'll win.
I'm really hopeful we'll win.
I mean, the other side of the draw has opened up. Even the draws, the
old competition has opened up.
Yeah, I mean, we beat them, and if South Africa beat Cape Verde, we're playing South Africa, we'll play Cape Verde.
We are playing Cape Verde.
I mean, all due respect to the teams left, I think we have an easy route to the final.
Yeah.
I was of the opinion we'll get to the final. I'm still standing on it, and I think I'm going to extend it and say we're going to win it.
You said it then.
I think we're going to win it. So I'm saying, Fed, credit to him. His prediction is almost there. The Gambia coach, before the tournament started, he said Nigeria and Cote d'Ivoire were going to make the final. He made that call. In fact, he also went as far as saying that the North Africans are going to have a woeful tournament because they're not going to survive in these conditions.
Yeah. And the only team that's ever done that is Egypt.
Egypt, yeah.
And unfortunately, they couldn't do it.
So it's been spot on so far, so good. But what do you make of Cote d'Ivoire? I still think Cote d'Ivoire is shit. Against Senegal, they played well.
No, I think Senegal played into their hands. I think Senegal played into their hands. Two things. I think Senegal got stuck into whatever physical altercation the Cote d'Ivoire, the Ivorians are trying to have. And secondly, I thought at some point they could have taken our money. Mm. I felt that there was a bit of an exhaustion on his part, that he wasn't having that influence, that impact anymore.
See, before this tournament, I questioned the fact that the Saudi Arabian delegation, Senegal, the Saudi Arabian delegation coming to this AFCON were going to struggle because there's no intensity in the Saudi Pro League.
Yeah.
People keep on talking about how the league is improving. Ronaldo went as far as saying that the league is better than he first said MLS. Now he said it's better than the French league. Interestingly, somebody put it on Football Manager, tried to do a simulation of Saudi Pro League. And Ligon definitely dusted them. But that's a different conversation. But they lack intensity, and you could see it in the tournament. Players like Kalidou Koulibaly.
See, they played Inter Miami.
They
were leading 3-1. Inter Miami came back.
So you could see with Sadio Mane.
Yeah.
You know, who
should have been Sadio Mane, Riyad Mahrez
was off the pace.
Yeah.
Was off. I think the final game of the tournament.
He was dropped. Yeah.
He was dropped.
Yeah.
So I think the Saudi contingent they couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, they couldn't.
Despite the conditions in that part of the world, almost similar
to what we have.
Why do you think John Anderson wants to leave and goes to Ajax? Not because he also wants to continue playing for three lands, but also, he couldn't play in front of fans. The intensity was lacking, and these players, they're very much used to it. So I also think that, when you drive, you're in gear one, right? You want to switch to gear two, you do easily. Senegal couldn't get into gear two.
That's in that game against Cote d'Ivoire.
Because they side well, early goal.
Yeah.
That's what you want in a game like that. That's what you want in a game against the host.
Yeah.
Shut them down.
Shut
up the crowd. You got it.
But somehow they just couldn't get into the next gear. And it was pitiful to watch. And it was interesting to see Cote d'Ivoire revert to a lot of their old guys.
But that's all thanks to the coach.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying now.
Yeah, MS5.
The guy goes, drops Frankesi.
Brings back Kusunu.
Brings Seri.
Yeah,
brings Seri back in. And I'm like, what's going
Kusunu
on here?
Kusunu was back. Seri dropped back. For Kese. He made some big moves.
Yeah.
Even in his changes, you could see he took his time.
Yeah,
he didn't play to the gallery.
Yeah,
I thought he got almost everything right.
Yeah, he did.
Adingra came on and...
So, but first, what were they thinking? Looking for a coach all over the place? No. Didn't they have...
They're looking for Avery now, right? If you have the chance to get Avery now,
no, but I'm saying... I think that's how they put it, narrow-minded, that they didn't have a succession plan if the coach was
they
not...
They thought they were out of the competition. They only got back on the final day of the round of six, group stages now. So by the time they start realizing that maybe we could still go through, they're talking, and you know that the Federation has got a close relationship with France, even politically.
Yeah.
They are very much, and they were trying to say, okay, could Avelina just come in? He's the coach of the women's national team for France. Okay, just help us. And I think he was with them.
He was coached them too now. Huh?
Yeah. Did he win the title with them?
Yeah, he did.
He won the title
in 2015.
So with two African teams. Yeah. So they're like, okay, maybe we could benefit, but that could happen. But MSY was...
Yeah.
Yeah. That reminds me of the last AFCON, Jalel Kadri.
Yeah, now the traditional coach. That's what got him the job.
The main coach caught COVID on the eve of the game.
He now beat Nigeria.
That's how he got the job. And he took the job, but that is exactly...
Only now said enough.
All right, but we're having the fun at the AFCON, honestly. Oh, yeah. I'm enjoying it. Every game has been fun.
And what's so surprising is that I've, like, if I go through Twitter, I'm seeing some unusual people that follow European football are following the AFCON.
Even the foreign media, CBS Golasso.
Yeah, I'm like,
Sky Sports.
This is serious. Yeah. They're like, ESPN. We're having the AFCON. It's really, I'm like, wow, this is interesting. That you're right bang in the middle of a season. I was telling you yesterday that I cannot remember.
The Premier League took a back seat.
I can't remember watching a full European game since that one started.
Guess what? There's Chelsea Liverpool tonight and there's no AFCON.
But it just seems
like an ordinary game. Yeah. I hope we don't get withdrawal
syndrome
after the AFCON. It's been really good.
No, but the beauty of it is that once it ends, Champions League kicks in.
Oh, yeah.
So
True. All right, so that should wrap it up for AFCON. In fact, she will never spend one hour like this. All right, I think we've got about some 20 minutes to spare, though. Now, let's talk about one of the biggest stories of the last week, and that was the Klopp bombshell.
Yeah.
Absolutely nobody saw it coming.
At all.
Nobody saw it coming.
No breaking news.
The only people who probably saw it coming were the guys up top, who were pre-informed,
top guys in the room,
reportedly in November. Even they didn't know that. They knew it was going to come, but they were hoping that because
somewhere along the line,
the report was that when he told them that he didn't want to be coach anymore, or he didn't have the energy anymore, they didn't try to convince him to stay. But they said, okay, let's give him time. Maybe he will come back to his senses. Maybe he will do a Sir Alex Ferguson in 2001.
Yeah,
I think it was 2001. It was 2001 basically, when he announced that he was going to then change his mind. You know, they thought that was going to happen and suddenly it didn't happen and it became reality that this guy, after 9 years, was going to go. I don't think he will be number one or number two in Liverpool history.
No, of course not.
But they will hold him up there. There's Bill Shankly, there's Bob Paisley, but there's Jurgen Klopp after that.
Probably...
No,
yes,
nobody.
Because of the Premier League
type. Yeah.
No, there's Kenny Dalglish.
I know there's Kenny Dalglish. Who also is an emotional choice, right? Yeah. But I think Jurgen Klopp, by the time he's done,
it's Kenny Dalglish.
I think there's both.
Because Kenny Dalglish ticks both boxes, played and managed.
Anyways, I'm not a Liverpool fan. I'm not a Kop eye, so it depends on how the Kop eye see him. But what I know is that Klopp is up there.
Yes, he's up there. But at the same time, I look at it and I'm like, well, what's this fuss I'm making about him?
Oh, really?
Yeah. 9 years, one title, one Champions League, one FA Cup, one League Cup.
Yeah, but what has taken that praise, what has made it effusive is the fact it took them from obscurity and it's placed them right up there.
Yeah.
And that is why I don't think Dalglish had that effect.
Yeah, but at the same time...
That's the effect that Bob Paisley and Bill Shankly had at Liverpool.
Yeah,
they took those clubs from right
but
out
at
of
the same
nothing.
Time, Wally, that's more or less giving credence to finishing second. It's like rewarding second place.
No, it's not about even the second place. It's about how Liverpool are now in the conversation. Liverpool were 10th when this guy joined.
Yeah, in the conversation, yes. But at the same time, The bulk of the period has been there. They only won one title. Wale,
they won,
means,
they won the title in the midst of the petrol...
Of City's dominance.
No City's doubt. Dominance, which was filled by... No, no, let's...
You want to go there?
No, of course.
You want to go there?
Was City's success not filled by the money from Dubai?
You want to go there?
Or United Arab Emirates, or wherever it
is. You want to go from? There? Bottom line, it means that the kudos that he's getting, I think, is over bloated. But in the sense that there's just this air that we, as a football community, we are beginning to reward second place as something that we should be carrying head and shoulders, carrying so high and giving so much credence to. He did well. You mentioned when he came in, they were 10th, brought them all the way up. They got to three European finals, or is it? Yeah, three European finals, huh? Three Champions League finals.
So you see what I'm saying?
One European League final against Sevilla. His first European League final was against Sevilla.
Now, Yemi.
Yeah, but don't you remember?
Apart from that, he improved the team. I was reading.
Yes,
I was reading an article by Professor Sommer, and he said that one of the metrics for knowing a good manager is when he joins a side, he improves the side by at least 4.5%. But when Klopp joined Liverpool in his first season, so what the professor said, when the manager joins his first season, at least he improves the side by 4.5%. Klopp improved Liverpool in his first season by 10%.
They got to a cup final.
Yes. And it was sustained. The only period when they seem to have dropped a bit was that Van Dijk injury here, right?
Yeah.
That's the only season. And for the kind of football club plays, it is shop till you drop. It is energy.
Happy.
When you lose the ball, chase it again. When you are tired, you run again. You know it can be demanding. But if you have been able to maintain that for about 8 years, that's due credit.
Yes. There's due credit.
And you mentioned the tournaments or the finals they got. In fact, Liverpool were down and out when this guy joined. They were down and out. And nowhere. So I think that he deserves all of the credit.
Yes, he deserves credit. He's done
and I think his second
job.
Best is right now in the world. I think Pep Guardiola is number one. Klopp is number two.
No, without a doubt, Pep is number one.
Yeah, Klopp is number two.
No, I'm sorry. Why are you going to put Carlo Ancelotti?
I'm not going to destroy Ancelotti. No, I'm not destroying Ancelotti. Was one champion. But I'm looking at the impact managers can have in teams.
Wally, if Pep is number one, Carlo Ancelotti can only be number two. They cannot be anywhere number two. And Pep as number one is still arguable because in some people's book, the super Carlo Ancelotti is number one.
No, Ancelotti can't be number one. It's Pep.
Why not?
Pep's number one.
Why?
Pep's number one.
Why can't Carlo Ancelotti be number one?
Pep achieved success at Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Man City. Ancelotti.
Ancelotti?
Yeah.
Success at Milan, Real,
in what year was
PSG.
That?
Wait, now you are mentioning the
okay.
PSG, Bayern Munich. He's won every PSG. League in top five leagues. Talk about that one.
No, I'll take Pep Guardiola, but it's not to date. It's not to get into that. But I can have Carlo Ancelotti number two. But Klopp, why I initially put Klopp at number two is the impact.
Isn't
the instantaneous,
this conversation?
Is the international impact it tends to have on the team. Just like Pep always has on
still,
teams too.
But still.
Okay, when Ancelotti gets to a team, how do you guys describe the way his team plays? We can't describe it. Oh, we'll say he allows his players to express themselves.
Yeah,
which is
a
style as well. Which is a style, right? But with Klopp, we know, we can see it. The eye test is there. It's pressing. It is counter-pressing. And we can see the effect. We can see the result. Not that you can't see with Carlo Ancelotti as well. You can. But with Klopp, it is something that is practical.
Yeah, but still... is bang right in the middle of the Manchester City domination. There's an airy.
How many Premier League teams won titles under that City domination? Only Chelsea.
And Leicester.
Even United could do it.
And Leicester.
So, how many titles? Who broke?
So it's the same.
Who broke Bayern's hold on the Bundesliga?
That's Germany. I'm talking, that's Germany.
He was still Klopp now.
Yeah, that's Germany. But you know, if
you are and he's done all of this now, with limited resources.
If I give Klopp all this credit, then we can sneak in Claudio Ranieri into the conversation.
What conversation? He won the league with Leicester City.
What? Yeah.
In a one-off year.
What? One of what?
It is a one-off year now.
And
that's
so
a, that's him. Leicester Klopp, allowed, Klopp won, in the yes, championship.
Klopp won his league title in a one-off year. COVID year.
So
restriction okay, everywhere.
So it was one-off. Have they challenged since then or not?
That's not
have Leicester challenged since then or not?
Challenge. Well, who, challenge as against winning?
No.
My brother, the conversation we should
see,
be having
when is you win, when you win
winning.
Titles, when you win titles,
winning.
When you win titles, right. You want to push on. Leicester didn't push on, let's be very honest.
Yes, let's push on.
Liverpool
but,
have
but
pushed
still,
on. Liverpool right now are even leaders in the Premier League.
Yeah, but
what
still,
are we saying now?
When they stand side by side.
I never say Klopp is stands Pep. I'm not saying it stands side by side with Carlo Ancelotti, who has a story career as a player and even as a manager.
Yes.
You know. But I'm only saying that Klopp sits on that table as well. And he sits comfortably on that table. That's just what I think.
He's in the conversation.
Yeah. All right. What next for Liverpool? They are in mourning mode. Although Klopp has told them, see, let's be focused.
I
like that about him because see the tendency of what is
losing
done,
or derailing.
Yeah, it could derail the season. I mean, look at what Van Dijk was saying.
Well,
Van Dijk was saying that he doesn't know if he wants the club. Because Van Dijk, Salah and Trent have got 18 months left on their contract.
Yeah.
It's a crucial period for the club.
Very crucial. And I know that somewhere along the line, Mr. Salah is leaving in the summer.
Yeah.
Very, very, potential is very high. There's a huge danger with this decision coming now. And that's why he's telling them to try and remain focused. Not get overboard with it.
Even the fans told them, please tone it down.
Down.
Yeah.
At some point during the season, I wanted Liverpool. I felt Liverpool were good enough to win the league. They seemed like the only team good enough to go toe to toe with Manchester City, as everybody knows. But somehow I don't want them to win the league anymore.
Why?
Because that ovation that you have been giving him already.
It becomes fitting.
You're not giving when they win today. So it's better that you know, Liverpool don't win.
Who knows? Liverpool can even win all four titles. They are involved in all four titles. Yeah,
they can't win all four.
Then the FA Cup, then the Capital One Cup final.
Yeah.
And Europa then the Europa League. And their leaders in the Premier League.
They can't win all four. Don't worry.
We'll see.
They'll win.
They are currently the best team in the Europa League. Hope you know that.
Yes. Well.
Who's please raise me another
there's
name.
There's Roma there now.
No, Roma, what, please?
With Danilo De Rossi, new ginger.
Please, let's be very factual here. Liverpool are the best side left in the Europa League. In the Premier League, crucially for them, they have a game on Man City at Anfield. If they win that game, and they can push on, maybe they win the league.
Yeah, maybe.
So,
maybe.
But Arsenal have got themselves in that concern for now. What happens this weekend will also tell if us are serious.
Oh, yeah, so
because they play Liverpool again.
Play Liverpool.
And they are playing Liverpool without Salah, without maybe Trent, without maybe Szoboszlai. So if you can't beat Liverpool.
No, Szoboszlai played.
I think it's Szoboszlai is back. Uh-huh. But if you can't play Liverpool, who are almost at their knees,
and
beat them at home, you don't deserve to be in the conversation then. So that's. But in terms of succession for Klopp, they've not started talking yet. The number one thing for them is to bring in a sporting director because
the sporting director
the German guy was just brought
so it's almost like a
I understand German guy was brought in to help them with this transfer window. Michael Edward was touted to come back but he said he's not coming back.
Yeah.
But credit to not only Klopp in this period of that success. I think Liverpool amongst the big sides in England, even in Europe, are one of the most advanced analytical sides based on data, you know, and that's included Michael Edwards at a point in time, Julian Ward. They had a set, you know, they've really advanced in terms of scouting.
Their backroom is very good.
In fact, it's almost like an American sports style of management, front office.
But you know, it's not today.
Yeah, I'm only saying that.
From Gillette and Hicks.
Yeah, it's the American style.
They had Camoli.
Yeah.
Moneyball. We're trying to do Moneyball.
Yeah, true.
Which led to the sign of the likes of Henderson, Milner.
They've had someone like a front office style of management, which has really helped. They used to have a transfer committee at the point in time. But you could realize that all of this helped in
shaping.
I mean, Klopp wanted. I remember I read somewhere that when Klopp joined, he was supposed to be Mane, Firmino, guess who? Julian Brandt. He was Michael Edwards who cranked up the numbers, analytics, and said,
for Salah.
Now imagine if it was Brandt. I'm not saying I will never know. But I mean, look at Salah, you know.
So Salah would have gone back to Chelsea.
Yeah, so yeah, a lot of decisions that Emmanuel would have made on his own, but because he has
he had a good working system.
Yeah, so credit to the backroom staff for Liverpool. They've done good stuff alongside. So let's talk about succession plan. And like I said, new sporting director then. In the succession for club starts, I'm sure they'll be talking to a couple of names much later on, under the scenes, behind the scenes. But Xabi Alonso here is favorite, not because they have spoken to him, but because
there's a clamor.
Yeah, there's a clamor.
He's the shining light.
I remember he also has a clause in his contract, Leverkusen.
Yeah, that is either Liverpool or Real Madrid.
Or Real Madrid or Bayern Munich. Yeah. But here's my problem. Do you think they're a perfect fit? Alonso was a perfect... You see, if Alonso was a football player, he would have been a perfect fit for Jurgen Klopp as a football player.
Oh, yes.
Pinging those passes to Salah, you know, left, right, middle. He would have, but as a manager, is Xabi Alonso the right fit for Liverpool?
You know, we've had a conversation on this pod before where we're looking at Xabi at Real Madrid. And looking at, does he fit in?
Mm-hmm.
What does the future hold in terms of the direction Real Madrid have already taken in terms of the transfer business that they've been doing? Refreshing the team, making it younger, putting a lot more energy, you know, in the team. And then you now come to Liverpool and you ask yourself, are they tilting the right direction? In some ways, there are some similarities. One of the such rises is the quality of the fullbacks that they have. So for Xabi at Leverkusen, in Frimpong and Grimaldo, you have almost something similar to what Liverpool has with Trent and Robinson. Fullbacks that are heavily involved in play, contributing in assists, delivery in goals as well. Right? So, in essence, there are those similarities. However, in terms of situations,
mm-hmm.
Liverpool are advanced in the thinking of the club that they are. Leverkusen can tolerate a period of not being successful and allow the coach to go on and do whatever he likes. You know, he's building. But Liverpool will have that.
So back to your tactical reactions to Alonso being a fit. I don't think they're the right fit.
I isolated one part.
You talked about fullbacks. Yeah, lovely. Yeah, you make a good point there. But Liverpool are built on vertical chaos. Pressing. You know, the long passes. Finding Salah on the wings. Bar Leverkusen's Alonso thrive on short passes. Breaking the press. You know, finding...
Possession football.
Finding Granit Xhaka, Hendrix. Getting the ball to Willian Wirtz, Boniface isn't short.
There's construction.
Yeah, exactly. They don't rely on...
Pinging it.
So if Xabi Alonso probably comes to Liverpool, that means Salah will probably have to come inside. That means that...
That's if Salah will be there.
I'm only saying, it's so theoretical. Maybe Alisson will have to be a bit much more of a goalkeeper than the...
Than the super keeper?
Yeah, because, I mean, the back three for Leverkusen, Kosunu loves to push it up front. Dribble the ball. We could see that against Senegal, you know, when Cote d'Ivoire played. So I don't think that tactically they are the right fit. But coaches adapt.
Yeah.
Players adapt. You never know. You know. So we'll see how it pans out. And they come. Pause. Franklin Motor Mindy Stop it at the Mopax. Alright, so I was trying to take a look at potential replacements for Jurgen Klopp, and there are some very interesting names that came to mind, but I don't necessarily think that clubs like Liverpool or any club should replace a big manager with a big manager sometimes.
It doesn't
because when I look at the market, who could probably replace Klopp and have that instantaneous impact? And that's Pep Guardiola, to be very honest. Pep is the only one that can come to Anfield and
have an immediate impact.
Yeah. So there's one name my mind kept on going through. Thomas Frank. At Brentford.
No. You want him to suffer the Graham Potter?
Hey, That guy is coaching a club that's currently in 14th place. But I came across some very interesting numbers here, and it's coming from, it's a performance rating from one company called 21st Group. They compile stats on managers, players and stuff. It's just like Opta. And do you know that Thomas Frank is the third best coach outside of England's Big Six, PSG in France, Bayern Munich in Germany?
Yeah, I did at Barcelona.
Spain's Big Three in La Liga. Yeah.
Not Big Four. You didn't add Girona.
No. They're having an outlier season. Yeah. But according to those stats, he's the third best manager outside of that select because of the resources he's working with. I can go through lots of the numbers, but he's working with limited resources. They're also playing almost same style as Liverpool in terms of getting the ball forward, you know, pressing, a lot of pace as well. I'm not saying he's the right guy. I'm not saying he's the perfect fit.
Yeah, but the trajectory is wrong, Wale.
He's also paid his dues.
The trajectory is wrong, Wale. It's the same as the Graham Potter trajectory.
No, it's not Graham Potter.
It is.
No.
It is.
No, it's not Graham Potter. Thomas Frank and Potter are not on the same pedestal.
But their coaching teams, or they've been involved, they're involved with teams who are almost at the same pedestal.
So, Brentford and Brighton. So why can't they make the step up?
No. It's too, the leap is too high.
No, not when
it's
you have
too
spent.
Sudden.
Brentford have spent about how many years in the Premier League now?
About 4 years.
Yeah. So how is that leap too sudden?
It's the same thing with Brighton.
How is it sudden?
It's too sudden. Your leap has to be from limited expectation, medium term expectation, then you take the next step. Not many managers take that huge leap from Pam. See, Xabi Alonso, you mentioned first. See, not everybody is Pep. They can go from Barcelona B to Champions League winner. Right? And then go to every other place he's been to is one thing. Not everybody can be Pep. Xabi Alonso was at Sociedad B.
But you know that all of this reservation soon be had if I mention Roberto De Zerbi.
De Zerbi as well, right, as it is today.
Yeah.
See, that's also...
That Zerbi has been mentioned as a potential player to Guardiola at Man City.
Rather than a sandbag. See, the expectation at bigger clubs, at big clubs, is different from the expectation at Brighton. It's not from the expectation at Sassuolo, right? It's still a huge leap for him. And your methods will matter. The methods you adapt when you move to that big club will also matter. You can't go to a big club thinking, okay, I want to build, I want to be playing. Like, no, the decision at big clubs is instantaneous. You need to deliver immediately. Ask Andre Pirlo. Went from not everybody can be Pep that goes from Barcelona B and straight to the top. No, Xabi Alonso, you mentioned, went from Sociedad B to Bayer Leverkusen. That's one step. Now he can.
Does every manager have that trajectory?
That trajectory is
no,
seamless.
It is. It's like an unwritten rule. It's not an
exact science.
Yeah.
It's not an exact science, but it is good for lessons for your pathway. The lessons you will learn. In that part, once you take that huge leap, let's look back. How many people have taken that huge leap like that and have enjoyed immediate success? Maybe Conte, Siena to Juventus. But then, before Siena, there was Atalanta.
Anyways, we'll see. I mean, it'll be very interesting to see who will be anointed as a successor. Klopp already has said he won't
be involved.
Be involved. Just like, you know, Ferguson.
But there must be something. It's not just about he's tired.
I think so. That's it.
I think.
Who was speculating? I think it was one of the former Liverpool players saying that.
I've read some funny things.
He wasn't giving the transfer or whatever. There could be more than meets the eye. But I know for sure that the way this guy goes about his job, his energy's happening. And these managers also don't want to go into the training ground not wanting to give their 100%. If he was going to go and take the Germany job, I would have said, okay, But you know, the Agusman is it Agusman?
Yeah, the Agusman.
He's in charge. If he has a fine tournament, they'll probably keep him. This guy, when Pep went on a sabbatical, he took 1 year. Why is Klopp not deserving of his sabbatical? So Klopp can't take a sabbatical?
Well, a certain other guy to say was taking sabbatical only for the Italian national team.
No, that one was scammed Napoli. So why can't he take a sabbatical? But he said he's never coming back to England again.
I would never say never.
Never say never. Yeah.
I'm sure Rafa Benitez
said the same thing.
I'm sure Rafa Benitez said the same thing.
Never say never. So
Rafa did Chelsea, did Newcastle.
We'll see what happens, but we have to wrap up. Are you?
Yeah.
We have to go. We'll talk Xavi on the next episode, definitely.
Yes, we will.
Yeah. He's got a game tonight, Osasuna. Yeah. Yeah, I think they play Osasuna tonight.
Yeah.
Xavi's not happy at all. Yeah. And I'm also not happy with the way he's been treated, but we'll talk about it on the next episode. But we have to wrap up. Thank you very much, guys, for joining us on today's abridged version of the pod. But we'll promise you something very much, you know, fuller next week.
Yes.
So to have a lovely midweek/weekend.
Yeah.
And we'll see you very much. Ciao, ciao.